8:15 now. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. I'm joined in the studio now by Summit County Council Member Roger Armstrong. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie.
Let's see. Yesterday, Council looked at a proposed petition from the governor's office to ask for a Utah-specific program to manage our forests. Last week, you seemed a bit concerned that in the name of clearing deadwood, the county would be endorsing items that it doesn't really agree with. For instance, mineral and energy extraction?
Yeah, it's interesting. This is a petition by from the governor's office that they've asked the counties to review and to provide the governor's office with recommendation concerning forest lands that are located within the counties. And we do have concerns, as you know, we discussed yesterday with the representatives from the U.S. Forest Service. We do have concerns with deadfall and dead trees, beetle kill, et cetera, in our forests. And we've seen what can happen when major fires break out. And there's a real danger in our forests from that. So that's legit. And the cover letter that came and the instructions that this petition came with actually was wrapped around that. It talked about forest management and controlling catastrophic fires. But when you looked at the actual designations that they're asking us to make recommendations about, it includes mineral extraction and it includes additional recreational opportunities in roadless areas where it's not allowed now. So we need to be very careful that, I think as I said last week, that we stay true to our own values of conservation and making sure that we do the right thing while we look at how we access the forest, how we're able to get those dead trees out of there. It's a big, it's a very, very expensive effort. As we heard from the Forest Service yesterday, they cut and they clear these dead trees and they can have gigantic piles of logs. Getting those out of the forest after they're cut down is a real challenge. And even with it, what can be done with them commercially is starting to shrink now. So the market for what's left has to be figured out, and it's got to be a larger effort. So we're going to try and comply with what the governor has asked us to do, but I think we're going to comply with it in a way that reflects our concern with conservation issues as well as the fire concerns.
Yeah, when you think about it, though, the expense can kind of been drawn out over several years as opposed to when you have to fight a fire.
The downside, as they mentioned, you know, there are communities in Colorado that are still dredging out rivers and reservoirs from the silt that washes down after major fires, and it can cook the ground and, as I think Dano from the Forest Service said yesterday, turn it into a moonscape.
Yeah. And in terms of energy extraction, how much energy development do we have going on in the High Uintas?
I don't know that there's any, you know, Kim Carson and I met with a representative from one of the regional representatives from the Forest Service last year, a couple of years ago, and he talked about some extraction that's happening on the North Slope. I don't know if that's in Forest Service land. According to the reps that we had yesterday, they don't have the ability to grant those kinds of rights. If there are existing leases in place, they've got the right to continue to operate. But, pardon me, once a lease closes down or if somebody wants to acquire a new lease, that's a very difficult, if not impossible, process.
Right. And then in terms of mineral extraction, what are we talking about?
Well, I think that's exactly what we're talking about. You know, are we willing in these roadless areas tend to be our wild, and as one of the proposals from the governor's office terms it primitive areas. They're areas that don't have a lot of development. They may have very, very limited roads going through or dirt roads going through or Forest Service kinds of roads going through and not much else. So we want to protect those. And there is no development there. And I don't think, you know, we want to see development happen in our most sensitive areas. You know, some of these areas that we talk about were part of our PLI process that we worked on with Congressman Bishop's office years ago. And, you know, we were talking about some of the land very high up in the Uintas, which is at the top of our watershed. And this is a precious watershed that flows through Summit County that feeds the Salt Lake Valley and, you know, the Provo Valley. It provides a lot of water for a lot of people. And we do not want that watershed to be compromised.
So there was also a concern about an increase in motorized recreation. Are we just talking ATVs?
I think that for the most part, again, you know, they didn't share that information with us. It's just one of those things that appeared in one of the selections that we had to make. Hey, do you want to remove all controls off of these areas and allow additional roads and recreational activities, motorized recreational activities. And again, I think that we want to keep our most sensitive lands under the highest level of protection that we can.
So will the council make a decision on it next week?
We're having a meeting with the group that's organizing this for the governor's office that is, has sort of put these proposals together for the governor's office. A couple of council members are, and staff are going to meet with that group, I believe today or tomorrow, to have that discussion, to discuss some of the issues that you and I have just reviewed, and to discuss the parameters that we can send back. But I suspect, based on what I saw from staff, they took our recommendation from last week and started to tailor those recommendations so that we do want some limited ability to access the forest for that, specifically for forest management, for conservation purposes, and for catastrophic fire management. That's something we have to get.
Okay.
And then beyond that, probably not much more.
And the feds haven't necessarily given us the okay to do that.
Local control. The feds can't. The roadless rule kind of limits what they can do. And what we discussed with the Forest Service yesterday is there an emergency that you could declare so that you could go in and clear out materials? And they said, yes, in the case of a fire. And my response was, well, if there's an extremely high risk of catastrophic fire that's presented by this deadfall and by the dead trees, wouldn't that be an emergency situation? And they said that they thought that that was something that is probably worth exploring.
Okay. The TZO on shared active transportation, this is something you voted in favor of. How come?
Well, I think, you know, if you've paid a visit to California recently, to San Francisco or to Santa Monica, moreover, Santa Monica, San Francisco has kind of gotten their arms around it and banned the scooter outbreak. And even in Salt Lake, Beth and I had dinner in Salt Lake a couple of weeks ago, and the couple that we were dining with mentioned the scooters. I'd never seen them before. And suddenly when you looked around the rest, we were at about 9th and 9th in that area, and looking around, there were scooters everywhere. They were lying on the sidewalks, and it was a remarkable phenomenon watching people wandering around trying to find a scooter that had a good battery associated with it. Many of them had dead batteries, so they had to leave those aside, but they are hugely popular. They are hugely controversial in places like Los Angeles, where residents complain that people, after they're done using them, just throw them on their lawns, on the bike and skate paths and pedestrian paths down on the boardwalk in Santa Monica. The conflicts are just kind of remarkable, with scooters kind of cutting in and out of the travel lanes, and they're a lot of fun. Beth climbed on one in Salt Lake and had a quick ride and really enjoyed it. They're coming up here. We've already found a couple in the basin that somehow made their way up here by hook or by crook. So we know that that kind of technology will arrive here. We just want an opportunity to get our arms around it. So we put a temporary zoning ordinance in place addressing those kinds of uses so that we can come up with ordinances that make sense to make sure that people have liability insurance, to make sure that they have some sort of a plan to service these things, to collect them, to communicate with the public. I mean, there are a variety of points that have to be put in place.
Basically, you need to tell them to pick up after themselves, I'm guessing.
Yeah, and I think just be responsible, you know. It all goes back to, there are a lot of ways for us to make our way around this community. And this is a part of active transportation. Being able to take a scooter for a short distance from one point to another seems like a great idea. Let's just be kind to each other, as Charlie says, and respect each other and not interfere with other people's rights or what they're doing.
This gives you 6 months then to come up with those ordinances, basically just telling them how to behave. At what point then, I mean, can they not be here in the meantime?
They can be here in the meantime, but they have to enter into a license agreement with the county to be here so that we can make sure that we understand who they are, what they are, how they plan on rolling it out, make sure that they have a plan. That license agreement will cover many of the same kinds of terms, I think, that we would anticipate rolling into an ordinance. So it gives us, and it also limits, I think, the number that can be operating in the county to a total of three until this temporary ordinance is passed and and we have a permanent ordinance in place.
So that this be countywide, would it cover Park City, or would Park City have to institute its own?
I think Park City has to institute its own, and I think it's working on that now simultaneously. I think we were told yesterday they're parallel paths.
You heard from a lot of people during public comment. Jan Perkins asked you to work on the Summit Heritage Byway proposal from Pat Putt. What is that, and what's going on there?
Again, I think it's, Pat rides his bike to work many days during the year, and he uses the rail trail to get from the basin down to Colville. And he's met a lot of people, and making that trip at that pace, at a bicycle's pace, you see a lot of things and you learn a lot of things about the county. And it was Pat's idea that there are valuable sites and resources out there that we should call attention to, and that can be yet another amenity for the county, that actually recognizes and honors our heritage, whether it's agriculture or mining or whatever, and that if we were to find a way to find a way to bring the public in contact with that and to allow them to know what they're looking at any point that they're moving around the county. We have a county that's got a lot of historical treasures in it. And I think we all drive by many of those without knowing that we're driving by a site that may be important or have some sort of historical notoriety.
So this is essentially the rail trail. I mean, it's not the Heritage Byway isn't something else. It is the rail trail?
I think it would probably start with the rail trail, but I'm not sure it would be limited to that. I think we have, every time I drive by something that reminds me that we had a Pony Express route going through part of the county, or, we've got a big railroad history. The anniversary of the Golden Spike is coming up soon. So, we have a lot of things in this county that are special.
All right. You also heard from a crowd of about 15 turning up to support pickleball. They said they'd like to see a couple of courts at Willow Creek Park dedicated specifically to pickleball. Again, it's using traditional tennis courts. They said that they have talked to Basin Recreation about this. What's your take on this?
I think, it's a very popular sport. I've had friends, I've had family members that have tried it and from the first moment fell in love with it. It's something that's sweeping the nation. They have pickleball courts at some of the second home communities up here. And these folks play it on a very regular basis. There was a woman there who is apparently a professional pickleball player. I guess it only takes so long before any sport can have professional athletes involved with it. So she's an ambassador and a professional player and a very strong advocate. And this group is obviously very dedicated to the sport. They point out that it's a very social sport and that when you have limited space for them to both gather and play, that it can be, a very long time between games and therefore people get shut out of the process. So I think it's worth looking at. What they're proposing is to take two of the tennis courts at Willow Creek Park, which apparently is a great place for them to gather and play, and turn those, I think, into eight courts. I think you can take two tennis courts and turn them into eight courts. Maybe it was four. They want us to consider doing that, to talk to Basin Rec about that. And they're bringing money to the table. They provided an estimate to do that conversion at about $44,000, 44 plus. And a woman stood up and said she would be willing to contribute 40,000 of the 44. So it seems like it's a group that's very driven. We've seen letters to the editor from them. I think they've been in here and had a chat with you a few weeks ago about the same thing. So they're very motivated, and it's worth our having a discussion with Basin Rec about.
At the same time, my tennis player friends tell me they're feeling a bit threatened by the pickleballers because they feel like they have a limited resource as it is, and to take away more is not the right thing to do.
And I am happy to say that is so far above my pay grade in terms of trying to figure out. Basin Rec is going to have to look at the available facilities, and I actually heard you speaking this morning about Basin Rec doing that new survey to find out what the needs are in the community. So I suspect that will be part of it. And if we just need to add pickleball courts, we should probably think about that. If we can convert tennis courts because some are not being used on a regular basis and find a balance there, then we should consider that as well.
All right. Two other residents talked about options for composting. Again, one of the objectives from your solid waste action plan. Anything new there? What did they have to say?
Well, I think, you know, this arises out of Leadership 101, the 24th leadership group, and their project had to do with organic waste and how to deal with it. And I think what I understand from talking to Sarah Hall is that a number of restaurants in town have actually embraced the concept and are recycling their green organic waste, I guess, the green foods, potatoes, carrots, things like that. But the proteins, the meats, can't be recycled in the same way. And that requires, you know, probably some kind of hauling. And the question is, do we invest in a digester? There's an organization down in Salt Lake or Morgan County, I can't remember where they are, that actually has a digester that they're putting into use. There have been some companies here in Park City that have offered to pick up and haul, and I think some of that is ongoing. One of those companies, I understand from Tim Loveday at the landfill, has gone away. The partnership dissolved, so one of those is off the board. But I think it's part of our overall solid waste plan to look at, you know, how we deal with whether it's yard clippings, organic food waste. Tim mentioned that when we look at this from the perspective of what's happening to our landfill, which is expensive because, you know, opening new landfills, closing them are $1 million plus projects to do, and acquiring the land alone is extraordinarily expensive. So we want to preserve as much of our landfill as we can. This organic kind of waste packs down fairly compactly, so it can actually be placed in the landfill and has somewhat less of an impact than other kinds of waste. It does contribute to methane, and so there are reasons to recycle it, but in terms of where it ranks overall on in our solid waste program, I think we have to take a look at that and look at what the expenses are. It's encouraging to see that private markets are developing to help gather up that kind of waste and take care of it, and we would hope that would continue as well.
Okay. Finally, just wanted to ask you, as we opened up the hour, the Basin Recreation Board is meeting tomorrow in a special meeting to consider spending some open space money for the Oscarthorpe Farm conservation easement. Tom Fisher, of course, telling me that he didn't want to get out in front of the county council, but you're right in front of me here, so I'll ask you. I mean, if this does come to the county council, will you support spending those open space bond monies?
I think that there is probably a point at which the council would contribute open space monies to that. And I think that we will probably have, I'm hopeful that we will have a resolution and a possible announcement about that in short order.
Again, what's changed, if anything? I mean, because I know that the council was feeling like, well, unless we can get some more public access onto this property, it just doesn't make sense. It doesn't support our goals of recreational open space.
Well, I think it's not just, and again, I don't want to get out ahead of any announcement, but, you know, I can tell you that the analysis of that, whenever we talk about spending recreational open space funds that are a function of that bond or proceeds from that bond, they've got to be tied to some sort of recreational activity. We can't spend them otherwise. So that was a major part of the discussions that we've been having with the Summit Land Conservancy. How do we come up with, you know, how do we match the amount that they're asking us to contribute to the benefit that the public is getting? And, you know, whenever we do any of these land deals, the challenge that we have is that we're never, ever dealing with a single landowner. We're dealing with an entire open space program. And when we make a deal with one, every other landowner that we look to make a deal with after that looks at the prior deal, both for valuations to understand how much was paid per acre, as well as what they had to give up to get the funding. So if we wind up making a deal that is completely out of step with where we've been before or creates a precedent that requires us to expend more and receive less for the public, we've got a problem. So we've got to be very, very careful. And we're extremely conscious about how we spend our open space monies.
Okay, Roger, I'm going to leave it there. Thanks for your time this morning.
Thanks, Leslie.
Summit County Council member Roger Armstrong, you're listening to the Local News Hour. The Wasatch County Council recently approved the final density for what's being called the Mayflower Mountain Resort, the 2,300 acres of property on the west side of U.S. 40 that connects to both Bonanza Flat and Deer Valley Resort. It's being developed by the Extel Development Company out of New York City. While the county council must still make preliminary and final approvals for this high-end hotel and residential development, which will add another base for Deer Valley Resort, this vote was important because it set the final density numbers and allowed financial arrangements to let the infrastructure for the entire Jordan L. Basin development begin. I spoke with this with Wasatch County Manager Mike Davis last Friday. Here's a portion of that interview. On August 29th, the Wasatch County Council made a motion and approved that unanimously to approve the master plan, the density determination, the constraint analysis for the Mayflower Mountain project. What did that approval do? I mean, it still has to come back for both a preliminary and final approval.
It does. In the best terms I can explain it, what it did was guarantee their density. And to do that, we wanted to have an idea of their plan, of where things were going to be, and so forth. Our code gives them certain density in that area by virtue of the code, but there was a portion of it which was called the mining influence area, which because back in the 80s there was still mining activity there, we didn't look at that area. We just excluded it, the whole area, from consideration. And now that the mining has been finished and it's no longer a mining area, that was added into the to look at the density that's there. And so together, the two together, the council gives them their master plan density, which gives them a guarantee of density. It kind of outlines where the village is going to be, where roads are going to be, homes are going to be. They will now need to come in and do a preliminary for a preliminary plat that would identify phases of what they're going to build. They're not going to build it all at once, obviously. And so they'll come in with, for example, it might be a hotel, and they'll say, okay, here's a phase. We're going to do a hotel. And so then we'll go and dig into the detail of that hotel and all the infrastructure and so forth that goes into it. And so, there's a lot more to do, but it was a big step.
Yeah, so the total density is what? It was like 1,024 plus more for the mining influence zone?
Yes, and it was an additional about 600. And then we do not, it might have been 700, we do not count the commercial aspects in density. So if it's a true hotel, in other words, not a condo hotel, that doesn't count towards the density. If it's a restaurant, that doesn't count towards the density. And so the density is geared towards residents, whether they're part-time or full-time. So any condominiums, hotel condominiums, homes, condos, or I said condos, townhomes, anything like that would be counted in that density.
Yeah, I think that's weird that no commercial was ever anticipated for this area. How come that was done that way?
Well, it was anticipated. It's just that it's been several years ago, the council had determined they wouldn't count that density in the master plan to entice more commercial activity. That was a conscious decision back in the day. It no longer applies, but their application for their density was before that was changed.
How much commercial then is in?
It's about 250,000-300,000 square feet of conference area and commercial activity. Yes.
So the rush to do this, I mean, I felt like that the county council felt like they had to do this. Why was that? I mean, I heard something mentioned about the developer needed to close on the financing or something.
Well, it's somewhat complex, but that is a component of it. But in addition, they're donating a $16 million parcel to the military for the military hotel. And before they would do the donation, they wanted to have their density secure, as well as the ability to finance the construction of the development. And so there were a lot of pressures, it's the word I'll use, to get the density determined so that they could proceed forward, donate the property. And once the property is donated, because we have potential tax increment issues, that will allow that to trigger. We have some other developments in the area that are ready to develop. The Sky Ridge down by the Mayflower Marina, all those have their approvals and are ready to build. If they started building before we had the tax increment in place, we would lose that tax increment. And so they wanted to get that in place before any of these other developments build so that we can capture the tax increment to help pay for the infrastructure, for the roads, the ski amenities, snowmaking, all of those things.
Right. Bob Wheaton from Deer Valley was concerned about a couple of things, and that being one, the road, and then the number of bridges. And he told the county council that the way that it's laid out does not make for a world-class ski resort. So I guess, is there an opportunity to come back and change that, or is
there that... is. There is. And part of what we did in that process was we declared that they could bring to us what we call an alternate transportation plan, which would remove those roads from that hillside and allow, well, it actually would have temporary roads that wouldn't be included in the, that wouldn't be plowed during the winter. And so it could be a road that the, then the ski run covers during the winter. So during the summer for fire access and other things like that, we would still have those roads in place. But for wintertime, we wouldn't need them because the risk of wildland fire is reduced. And so we have an ability to go through that, but we'd have to go through that process, and we don't normally do that in the master plan process. And so that will be something they'll want to go through now, and we can remove some of those roads and so forth to, and Bob's correct, we want to push that development down the hill so it's not pushing up the hill, so to keep the ski experience at the level they want to.
Right. We're talking some 1,700 ERUs density for this, residential density. What does that mean in terms of square footage or number of units? I mean, how big is this?
It's pretty big. It's basically, for the condominiums, it could be fractional ERUs, but for the most part, it's one unit per ERU. And so we're looking at 1,700 condos or homes or townhomes or something to that effect. So that's quite a few.
And that's just within the Mayflower Mountain. We've got an additional density on the Mida, or is it all grouped together?
No, that's essentially the west side of the highway, west of Highway 40. That density is in that area right there.
Now, back to the mining influence zone, Extel had to go and get a court settlement. I mean, does that still allow mining to one day happen underground? Did they just buy the surface rights?
My understanding is they just have all the surface rights on it. The underground rights are still held by some of the other mining companies. And I'm not in the middle of that discussion, but they did secure all the surface rights so that they could build on those areas. So I don't know how, I don't know that it's feasible to do anything when you don't have any surface rights to do anything underground, but that's the way it stands now.
Well, I'm just wondering, I mean, if silver prices ever got back to the, you know, that it made it profitable, would we see a mining operation in the middle of this?
I don't think so now with the what they've secured with the mining companies, and that was a private deal that they did, but they basically secured all the surface access issues, and so anybody that had rights underneath could not use the surface to access them. So I don't know how they would.
I heard reference to this being called Mayflower Mountain Resort. Is it its own ski resort, or is it part of Deer Valley?
My understanding is it's part of Deer Valley. And Deer Valley, that's why Bob Wheaton is involved in it, is to secure that if Deer Valley runs that, which is it's anticipated, they have to build it to their standard. Everything has to be constructed per Deer Valley's designs, and when they hired SE Group, I think is what it's called, and Deer Valley, that's who they said had to be used for this, and so that's who Extel is using, and so it's all anticipated that Deer Valley is going to run this. They have leases. Deer Valley has current leases on the areas for the ski runs and so forth. So, yes, it's going to be Deer Valley.
But what about some kind of operating agreement? I was surprised that the Wasatch County Council didn't ask for something like that as part of their approval. I mean, there's no guarantees that Deer Valley will be operating this.
The operating agreement will come through the development agreement, the guarantees for operation. And so once they start applying for their plats, that's when we'll have the development agreements done, and all of those types of arrangements will be addressed in the development agreements.
My understanding was that Deer Valley owned its property outright, that it had assumed its leases with the mining company long before it sold to Talisker. Is that not the case?
There are properties they do own, but much of that that one side, the Mayflower, has been a lease, and it's still a lease. And I don't know the exact acreages or anything like that, but they have been leasing those grounds for many years.
As part of this, also 6,000 skier days would be allowed out of this portal. I mean, I think that's about two-thirds of the existing Deer Valley Resort, but I don't think we're talking about adding two-thirds of the size of Deer Valley. No concern about blowing out Deer Valley ski caps?
Deer Valley is in control of that one. They will have full control over the number of skiers allowed on the hill. There will be several new lifts, which will change access for sure to the hillside. But the actual increase in skiers isn't going to be near as significant as one might think. And I don't have those exact numbers, but Bob has been working those numbers. And it's still... what's allowed for Deer Valley, as I understand it, is their service. And so they only allow the number of skiers that they can service. And when I mean service, what they can feed, what they can, how they can accommodate skiers. It's not necessary lift capacity or miles of ski runs or anything like that. It's more of what they serve. That's been their operating model for forever, and it's going to continue that way.
We heard that sufficient water rights are in place for all of the residential and commercial development, including the Maida development, but no water for snowmaking. We all know that that part of the mountain is going to take lots of water to keep snow on the ground through the ski season. So any concerns about that?
Well, what they have is all the drain water out of the mines that they own. And those waters, they have applications into the state. And my understanding is that they anticipate that they'll be able to use that water for the snowmaking. And so the water that was discussed was only for the culinary purposes for the ERUs and development. The actual snowmaking will come off of the drain waters and other waters that come out of the mines.
Okay. Any concern about that? I mean, we know here in Park City that water coming out of the mine tunnels is full of zinc and arsenic. Any concerns?
Yes, they're having to get discharge permits from the state on that before it can be used, and that's part of the process that they're going through now. And you're correct. All those have to be cleaned up to a level that's allowed to be in contact with people and so forth.
All right. Let's talk affordable housing. We heard 95,000 square feet. That's going to actually have to be moved because it's on a slope greater than 30%. But again, how many units is that? I mean, how many people are actually going to be living on site?
It was, I'm trying to remember the number, but 150, 250 units. And it's considered kind of workforce housing. So it's going to be restricted, deed restricted. It'll be... geared towards people that work and so forth in that area. There will be other affordable housing requirements. Again, that's going to be completely addressed through the development agreement. But there's talk of being able to help with some cash to help with housing for essential services like law enforcement and other things, and so that we can do some additional affordable housing in other places, as well as the workforce housing, which will be on site. And some of this will be in the way of, potentially in the way of a long-time commitment of funds to keep those levels of service up. And so it's many millions of dollars that we're looking at for the affordable housing plan. Until we have it finalized I don't really have the information to disclose at this time, but there will be a significant a way to address a lot of that up in that area.
So when does that get built? Was that part of, that will be a part of the development agreement as well in terms of the timeline?
It will, and it'll be phased. And so as they start, they'll have to build some of the affordable housing, and then as the development grows, they have to continue to build more, and which makes some sense because it's going to be more workforce housing. And so there's no need for the housing until some of the things are built. So some of it will be built concurrent and will go through time over a period of years.
Okay. And I also heard a golf course mentioned, yes, then no. Is one planned for the west side?
Not on the Extel, no.
What about the MIDA side of things?
MIDA is, we're continuing to work with MIDA on these issues. I think we're generally on board. There were some suggested modifications to the agreement with MIDA. We did not agree with some of them and proposed some of our own. We haven't heard back from MIDA. But in essence, the county at this point has an agreement in place, and the county is the land use authority over the land, and we're continuing to work with the developer. The developer's excited, so I think we're all okay. MIDA had some concerns of whether the county could handle the situation, whether we should turn the land use authority over to them or somebody else, and the county really isn't interested in that and never was from the beginning. We always wanted to have the land use control.
Yeah, I guess I understood MIDA to be a lot like a school district in the state. They basically can do whatever they want. That's not the case here?
Well, there's a little bit of that, and certainly things can change. The thing I think we have going for us right now is we do have an existing agreement in place that everybody signed. It was signed years ago that makes the county the land use authority. So unless that agreement is somehow negated or something is done with that agreement, the agreement stands.
And then we're also talking a conference center as part of the Extel development and a second conference center at MIDA?
They're talking about a couple different conference centers up there. And I don't remember the exact square footages, but the hotel that will house the military, the MIDA Hotel, as we call it sometimes, will be the largest. And there'll be accommodations for conventions and that type of thing with the hotel.
All right. And then a smaller one is part of the Extel, the Mayflower Mountain?
Yes, and they're kind of lumping that with a recreation center and some other things that they haven't really detailed out to us yet.
Right. There was also talk about the need for Extel to provide transit and at one point maybe tie into the county's transit system, of which there is not one yet. But I didn't see anything on the plans that showed some kind of transit center or anything like that. Is that a shortcoming?
No, actually, there are some on the Extel portion, as well as a couple of the developments that we're working on the east side of the highway. We are allowing for transit pickups and centers in those areas, and we're anticipating that in partnership with MIDA, we will be able to engage a firm or an authority to help us design the transit system. Of course, you need numbers with it, and so what we want to do is design it and know when we need to start implementing these types of things. But it's anticipated that part of the tax increment can help build these things. There likely will need to be some fees or a tax associated with supporting it, but a lot of the tax increment can help build it. So we're planning for that right now.
All right. Also, the VCP, this is known as the Voluntary Cleanup Plan. I mean, what time, we're talking about old mine tailing contamination or mine from the mining days. Where is this located?
Well, there are a couple of tailing areas that are up on that hillside that need to be taken care of. Those are all under the direction of the state, and our agreement is that we won't allow any of the development to proceed until the state gives the clearance on it. And so we're not involved with the exact cleanup or what the details of the cleanup are, but we've held the development that it has to be cleaned up. We have to have a write-off and a clean bill of health from the state until we allow the development to proceed. So we are waiting for that. Xtel is engaged in that. They've hired firms and are working on it. On the east side, those were completed this last year. That was part of the Mayflower property as well. And they did complete the capping and the sign-off from the state on those the settling pond areas that were there. So part of that's been done. There are a couple more to do up on the west side.
Okay, so they're being bermed and then covered as opposed to excavated and removed?
Well, on the ponds, they were bermed and covered. The ones on the west side, I don't know exactly what the state plan is at this time. Some of it will likely be removed. A lot of it will just be stabilized in place.
All right. And then with the exception of the Jordan Hill Parkway, are all the roads in the Mayflower Mountain development going to be private and gated?
Many of the roads will be private. Not all the private roads will be gated. The roads that are in the village area will be owned by the developer, but they will all be public access. And so for the parking and all that, all it means is the county won't maintain them. They'll maintain them themselves. The parkway, it will be a county road. Some of the roads in the residential developments are going to be private. There are collector roads that are public, county-owned roads in some of those developments as well. So there's a mixture of those. None of them that I'm aware of are being gated at this point. The public-private designation is mainly on the maintenance of the roads.
What are we talking about here in terms of the timeline on this? I mean, do you expect to see the final approvals by the end of the year, so or sooner?
The end of this year?
Yeah.
No. I would suspect we're going to work on the alternate transportation plan, which is going to remove some of those roads up on the hillside that Bob Whedon referred to. We need to start working on the development agreement, and they need to submit to us their plans for their preliminary approvals and their phases. And so we could receive some of those by the end of the year. The likelihood of them being able to construct anything, even if we get everything approved and so forth, they'll be the soonest in the spring to be able to start constructing, and that would be likely infrastructure issues, roads, sewer lines, water lines, and those type of things. I don't think we'll see any vertical for at least a year or more.
That's Wasatch County Manager Mike Davis speaking to KPCW last Friday. You're listening to the Local News Hour here on KPCW.